Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Often you'll hear an apologist say there are more manuscripts of the New Testament than any other book from the ancient world, therefore we can trust it. Well, what they don't tell you is that, yes, we have these thousands of manuscripts, but no two of them are exactly alike, and that, in fact, the differences in these manuscripts are more numerous than the words of the New Testament. So you have apologists who want to make these claims, but they don't tell you the full story.
That's liberal Bible scholar Bart Ehrman in a recent interview with him. He was kind of turning the tables. He said what is usually presented as good evidence for the Holy Scriptures, for the veracity of their historicity, and for Christianity by extension, is actually evidence against all of that. Is that true? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us here for the first half hour, part two of our weekly series with him on Christian apologetics. We will be talking about what is called the textual evidence, something mentioned there by Bart Ehrman a little bit later. Dr. Ryan Anderson will join us. We'll talk about the future of marriage and religious freedom, some solutions. He says the debate over marriage hasn't come to an end. It's actually just beginning. Dr. David Adams will join us. We'll conclude a three-part series, Does the Bible Support Abortion Rights?, looking at several passages, one from Genesis and two from the book of Numbers. Pastor Tom Baker will be teaching a Sunday school lesson with us. He's host of the radio show Law and Gospel. And then Molly Ziegler Hemingway will join us from The Federalist. Her reaction to this BuzzFeed video that's viral and all over the place, I'm a Christian, but I'm not. That's coming up in the last 10 minutes of Issues Etc. Feel free to join us with questions or comments over the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at @IssuesETC, or our beloved on-demand listeners, use the Issues Etc. comment line whenever, wherever you listen, 618-223-8382. Joining us for part two of our series on Christian apologetics today to talk about textual evidence, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. He's a distinguished research professor of philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and he's author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Thank you.
How would you respond to that attempt on Bart Ehrman's part to turn the table, so to speak? All this mountain of textual manuscripts, of different texts, of different manuscripts for the Old and New Testament, but the New Testament in particular, well, he says they're not evidence for the veracity of the document, but actually against it because no two are alike.
Well, that's entirely deceptive as he presents it. Yes, there are textual variations because in the copying of the original documents through the centuries, the copyists often made mistakes. But the field of textual criticism exists to examine the manuscripts, identify where the copyists have not been as accurate as they should, and to work one's way back to as close a text as possible to that of the original authors. That's exactly the kind of thing that's done for all literary works. That's how we get our texts of Caesar and Cicero, and it's also how we get our texts of much more modern writers, such as Shakespeare. We don't have the original manuscripts that Shakespeare himself wrote. What we do is to examine the copies that we still have, and we see where some copyists have made mistakes, and it's possible to correct these. So What Ehrman is doing is giving the impression that simply because the copyist made mistakes across the centuries, that somehow impugns the value of the original. Doesn't do that at all. Let me give you a quotation or two from authorities far more significant than Ehrman. For example, the greatest of the textual critics of the last century of the New Testament was certainly Frederick Kenyon, Sir Frederick Kenyon, who was principal librarian of the British Museum. And in his work on the criticism of the New Testament, he quotes Hort. Westcott and Hort produced one of the most important critical editions of the New Testament ever done. And he quotes Dr. Hort as follows. This is a little involved, but I think it's important. "The proportion of words virtually accepted on all hands as raised above doubt is very great, not less on a rough computation than 7/8 of the whole. The remaining 8, therefore, formed in great part by changes of order and other comparative trivialities, constitutes the whole area of criticism. If the principles followed are sound, this area may be very greatly reduced. Recognizing to the full the duty of abstinence from peremptory decision in cases where the evidence leaves the judgment in suspense between two or more readings, we find that, setting aside differences of orthography, of spelling, the words, in our opinion, still subject to doubt, only make up about 1/60th of the whole New Testament. In this second estimate, the proportion of comparatively trivial variations is beyond measure larger than in the former, so that the amount of what can in any sense be called substantial variation is but a small fraction of the whole residuary variation and can hardly form more than 1/1000th part of the entire text." Now, what does that mean? It means that these variations are in almost all instances trivial. One passage will say Jesus, manuscript will say, "Jesus and his disciples walked along the Sea of Galilee." Another one will say, "They walked along the Sea of Galilee," where Jesus and his disciples are mentioned in the previous verse. It's that sort of thing. And so what Bart Ehrman is doing is creating a straw man and creating doubt where scholars of far greater capacity than himself have not had any doubts at all.
Another objection that is raised, and this is not so much, I think even Bart Ehrman, for all of his disingenuousness on this, because he comes from, he has a pretty good scholarly pedigree, Bruce Metzger being his doctor father, I believe. But this one's more popular that I'd like you to respond to, and that is, it's kind of like the old telephone game where one person tells something and then they pass it along to another, and if enough iterations occur, you get a humorous outcome. You start out with something something very banal, and you end up with something bizarre by the time it's passed from one person to another, and that's the analogy people will say, well, the New Testament has been copied, but it's been copied, and then those copies have been copied, and those copies have been copied, and it cannot possibly bear any resemblance to anything close to the original, because every little change is going to compile and aggregate together to end up with something completely different than what was originally written. What's your response?
Well, that's really fairly silly, because we don't have a single linear situation in which manuscript A is copied by B, B is copied by C, C is copied by D, and so on down the line. So the game analogy just doesn't work. What we have is a situation where there are families of manuscripts, that is to say, quite a number of manuscripts that have been copied from an earlier primitive manuscript. And that manuscript, in turn, may be in a similar situation. So what the textual critic does is to take, let us say, the 30 copies that have been taken from that one manuscript and is able to compare the 30 copies with the manuscript from which they were taken, and it's very easy to recognize where variations have occurred. This is a highly technical field, and the people who work in this field know what they're doing. And for this reason, even if you take some of the worst manuscript copies that we have from the early Middle Ages, No substantive Christian doctrine is in any way imperiled. The variations are of such a trivial nature that they simply do not touch any essential theological question whatever. And it is possible, as one works back through the centuries and through bad manuscript traditions to better manuscript traditions, to arrive at a point where the variations are not of any significance at all. Again, let me quote one other scholar on this. This is the great B.B. Warfield of Princeton, who wrote a work on the authority of Holy Scripture. He did a book on textual criticism, and he says this: the autographic text of the New Testament is distinctly within the reach of criticism in so immensely the greater part of the volume that we cannot despair of restoring to ourselves and the Church of God God's book, word for word, as he gave it by inspiration to man. And he says also, the great mass of the New Testament has been transmitted to us with no or next to no variation, and even in the most corrupt form in which it has ever appeared, to use the oft-quoted words of Richard Bentley, the real text of the sacred writers is competently exact, nor is one article of faith or moral precept either perverted or lost. Choose as awkwardly as you will, choose the worst by design, and this is the result. So, the fact of the matter is that Ehrman and his ilk are simply creating a tempest in a teapot.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He'll be with us for about another 10 minutes on the other side of the break. It's part two of our weekly series with him on Christian apologetics. Staying in the area of the sources, we're talking about the textual evidence for the New Testament. He's Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. We'll be right back.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning chapel from Framer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Sophisticated Lutheran Apologetics. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.
The congregation at Lake George Lutheran Chapel is a proud supporter of Issues Etc. We are located on the western shore of Lake George. With the lake in view, Jesus still teaches from the boat of his church, and the people sit, listen, and are fed by Christ himself through his holy ministry and instituted means of grace. Every Sunday, 9 a.m., set your course to 1540 West 800 North, Fremont, Indiana. Like us on Facebook at Lake George Lutheran, and find out more at lakegeorgelutheran.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. Part two of our weekly series with him on Christian apologetics. We're talking about the textual evidence for the New Testament. Dr. Montgomery, you mentioned before that this is this noble and rather scientific enterprise of textual criticism. These people really do know what they're doing. They do know what kind of manuscripts they're dealing with. They know how to assess the parchments and things in front of them. But they also, and I want you to talk a bit about this, they also very thoroughly account for all the variants. Anyone who's looked into a critical edition of the New Testament in Greek will find sometimes far more footnote than actual text. What are they doing there?
Well, what they're doing is providing the reader with the very best text, the text closest to the original autographs, and then in footnotes, they are providing the best variant readings that correspond to the text. And the variant readings are, as we said before on the program, the variant readings are, to a great extent, very, very minor differences in expression. Some of them are merely spelling differences and that kind of thing. But the scholars who are producing these critical editions want to give the reader the opportunity to see what other readings are as close to the best readings as possible. They are not including hundreds of variations that are obviously copyists' errors, but they are providing some differences which are so close to the best text that they feel that the reader has a right to know what these are. If you work these through, you will discover just what we pointed out in the first half of the program by way of B.B. Warfield and Sir Frederick Kenyon and Dr. Hort, that these variations are not substantive. They are not of such a nature that they influence what the text is teaching or what the doctrine is as it derives from the text. And therefore, when people emphasize the fact that there are these variant readings, they are often creating doubt and worry on the part of Christian believers where there really isn't any need for that at all.
Is there a bit of historical chauvinism at work in the liberal Bible scholars here where they almost present it as a fault of the text themselves that they were manually copied? And of course, they speak from the secure position of a typographic era where copying errors still occur, but because of mass printing, they don't occur in the same kind of in the same way.
Well, that may well be the case. The fact of the matter is that the number of errors that appear in the course of the production of a modern book, if it's done on a traditional printing press or if it's done electronically, is still very, very great. The fact of the matter is, with my books, I've written or edited some 50 books, and no matter how carefully I present the manuscript to the publisher, somehow they manage to create all sorts of problems. And that's why it's necessary to engage in the most careful proofreading. And this is a laborious sort of task. The fact of the matter is that human error has not somehow disappeared just because we have moved beyond manuscripts to printed text. Not at all. All we've done is to transfer the errors to a new medium. What we want to do always is to try to get back as best we can to the original text. And, you know, today, even in the modern era, the autographs, that is, the actual manuscript as prepared by the author, is almost never available. I don't think that there are any of the manuscripts of my book still around, because once the book is printed, then one simply throws the manuscript away. It doesn't have any particular value. So one shouldn't get excited over the fact that we don't have the original manuscripts that were produced by the hand of the apostles. We don't have a single autographed manuscript of the entire classical world. We don't have anything that Caesar wrote or that Cicero wrote at all. So the process of getting back to the original for the New Testament is exactly the same as it is for all other literary works of antiquity. When I debated an atheistic scholar years ago in Canada, I said, yes, you could certainly throw out the New Testament, but before you do that, you'd better get rid of your entire knowledge of the classical world, because the fact is that the New Testament is better attested in terms of manuscript sources than any of the other documents of the ancient world. Sir Frederick Kenyon made this point. And under those circumstances, there's no sense in creating a fuss over some textual variants in the New Testament unless you are willing to cast doubt on everything you know about the ancient world.
When you say better attested to, that is an understatement, isn't it? There's no comparison, is there, between the textual evidence that is there with the New Testament compared to other sources of antiquity? Make the contrast for us.
Well, yes, this is true enough, owing to the fact that the apostolic writings were considered holy scripture from the very beginning, and therefore they were extensively copied and copied with more reverence than the secular literature of the Greco-Roman world. And so this is why the New Testament has so many manuscripts and therefore, of course, a great number of copyist errors. But these can be removed simply by comparison with better manuscripts.
We also have, and I'd like you to talk briefly about this if you would, we also have not strict copies of the New Testament documents themselves, but allusions to them, quotations of them, and then rather early on, translations of them from which we can make comparisons, don't we?
Right. All of this is added to the mix. The textual critic works primarily with the Greek manuscripts, of course, because the originals were done in that language. But there are these early translations into Latin, for example, translations into other Near Eastern languages, and those can often be helpful in clarifying the best Greek text by comparison. There's a tremendous body of information available to us, and it all should build confidence. It shouldn't cause us worry. May I mention another problem? There are some textual critics, and this is true within Lutheran circles, within conservative Lutheran circles, I'm sorry to say. There are some textual critics who have said this: because there's always the possibility of the discovery of new manuscripts and the new interpretation of the manuscripts that we have, what we really ought to do is to think in terms of the church preserving the truth of God by controlling the history of textual criticism and the like. This is a very, very unfortunate and dangerous kind of position to take. It's really the position of the Roman Catholic Church, where the Roman Church says it's the church that ultimately establishes Scripture. Not at all. Luther was dead right, as were the other reformers of the 16th century, that the Scripture stands over against the church, critiques the church, and makes sure that the church conforms its teaching to God's revelation. God's revelation is not the church. God's revelation is in Holy Scripture, and that can be indeed relied upon.
Dr. John Ward Montgomery is Distinguished Research Professor of Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He is also director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. You'll find a link to his books and to the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, thank you so much for your time.
You're very very welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Dr. Ryan Anderson. He's got a new book called Truth Over Rule, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. I'm interested in the future of marriage and religious freedom. We could talk about how we got here, but the real question is, where do we go from here? We'll answer that question with Ryan Anderson after this.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With the Simply Classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.